Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. In the third edition of a special podcast series, Cancer Network spoke with Dr. Daniel Morgenstern, advanced practice provider Mary Ellen Flanagan, and clinical pharmacist Janelle Mann, all from Washington University in St. Louis. The discussion focused on the use of TROP2-directed antibody drug conjugates for patients with non-small cell lung cancer, which included a review of dosing considerations and toxicity management strategies for agents like sacituzumab govitecan and datopotamab deruxtecan.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Daniel Morgenstern, thoracic oncologist from Washington University School of Medicine. Today, we'll talk about TROP2 antibody drug conjugates. The trophoblastic cell surface antigen, also known as TROP2, is a transmembrane protein that belongs to the epithelial adhesion molecule, the EpCAM family. Signaling through TROP2 leads to increased tumor cell proliferation, invasion, and decreased apoptosis. TROP2 is expressed in multiple cancers, including non-small cell lung cancer and breast cancer. It may be targeted with antibody drug conjugates, which are composed of monoclonal antibodies targeting an antigen of interest expressed on cancer cells, a linker, and a cytotoxic drug, which also known as payload. There are three TROP2 ADCs currently evaluated in advanced stage of development for patients with non-small cell lung cancer: sacituzumab govitecan, Dato-DXd, and sacituzumab tirumotecan. The first two are already approving patients with breast cancer. Both sacituzumab govitecan and Dato-DXd consist of humanized anti-TROP2 IgG1 monoclonal antibodies and a cleavable linker. The main difference between these two drugs are the payload, which is SN38 in sacituzumab govitecan, and the deruxtecan in Dato-DXd. There are differences in drug-to-antibody ratio, also known as DAR. DAR is defined as the average number of cytotoxic drug molecules attached to each antibody. It is 8.1:1 in sacituzumab and 4:1 in Dato-DXd. The focus of our discussion will be non-small cell lung cancer. And there have been two large randomized studies comparing anti-TROP2 ADCs to docetaxel in patients with previously treated non-small cell lung cancer. The first one is the EVOKE-1 study, where patients with previously treated non-small cell lung cancer were randomized to sacituzumab govitecan 10 milligrams per kilogram on days 1 and 8 every 21 days, or docetaxel 75 milligrams per meter square every 3 weeks. There were no significant differences in the overall survival. And when I evaluated cultural histology, the median survival was 10.2 for sacituzumab govitecan, 9.2 for docetaxel in squamous. And for non-squamous, the median survival was 11.3 months for sacituzumab and 9.9 months for docetaxel. The numerically better overall survival in those two subgroups was not significant, statistically significant in either subtype. In the TROPION-Lung1, Dato-DXd, 6 milligrams per kilogram was compared to docetaxel, 17 milligrams per meter square every 3 weeks. The median overall survival was 12.9 months for Dato-DXd, 11.1 months with docetaxel. The median PFS was increased with Dato-DXd, 4.4 versus 3.7 months, and the response was higher, 2.6 versus 12.8%. The median PFS was significantly improved with Dato-DXd in non-squamous histology, 5.6 versus 3.7 months, but not in squamous, where Dato-DXd had a numerically inferior PFS, 2.8 versus 3.9 months. Interestingly, in the TROPION-Lung5, the objective response rate for single-agent Dato-DXd in patients with previously treated patients was 43.6% in those with EGFR mutation. So both sacituzumab govitecan and Dato-DXd have been evaluated in combination therapy for patients with previously untreated metastatic non-small cell lung cancer. That means first line. In the EVOKE-2 study, sacituzumab was combined with pembrolizumab and carboplatin with great responses. In the TROPION-Lung2 study, Dato-DXd was evaluated in combination with durvalumab with or without a platinum, either carboplatin or cisplatin. The response rates in median PFS were also very encouraging. Since there was a significant improvement in PFS for Datu in a subset analysis of TROPION-Lung01 compared to docetaxel in patients with actionable gene alterations, a subsequent study called TROPION-Lung05 study showed that Datu-DXd had a response rate of 43.6% in patients with EGFR mutation. The results from the OptiTROP-Lung03 study, which compared sacituzumab tirumotecan, also known as sac-TMT, to docetaxel in patients who previously treated EGFR mutant non-small cell lung cancer. However, there was an abstract released on May 22, 2025, that showed a significant improvement in outcomes for patients treated with sac-TMT, including better objective response rate, 45% versus 15%, and median PFS, 7.9 versus  2.8 months. Just as a reminder, TMT is a TROP2 ADC with a TOPO1 inhibitor payload, just like the other two. This time, it is called T030, a cleavable linker, just like sacituzumab and Dato-DXd, and a DAR of 7.421. In conclusion, ADCs targeting TROP2 are promising drugs for non-small cell lung cancer. Although neither drug was more effective than docetaxel in the second-line setting, there are promising initial results in patients with EGFR mutations and in combinations with immune checkpoint inhibitors, with or without platinum. It is quite likely that at least one of the TROP2 ADCs will be approved for non-small cell lung cancer in the future. These ADCs, although promising, they have unique toxicities that should be known prior to their use. To review the toxicity of these drugs, it's my pleasure to introduce Mary Ellen Flanagan, our thoracic oncology nurse practitioner from Washington University.
Thank you so much, Dr. Morgenstern, for the introduction. My name is Mary Ellen Flanagan. I'm one of the advanced practice providers in the Thoracic Oncology Division at Washington University. It's certainly an exciting time to be a nurse and an advanced practice provider in oncology. We have new drugs with new mechanisms of action, as Dr. Morgenstern described. However, it's also very challenging for us. As providers, we've become experts in teaching our patients about chemotherapy, immunotherapy, and targeted therapy. Now we have a whole new way of treating cancer. As a provider, when I first learned about antibody-drug conjugates, my first thought was that there would likely be less toxicities because the cytotoxic payload is being delivered directly to the tumor antigen. However, most antibody-drug conjugates have toxicities associated with the payload, as well as unique toxicities, which can sometimes be poorly understood. I explain these drugs to my patients as chemo-like. Interestingly, the type, incidence, and severity of toxicities associated with antibody-drug conjugates are not just a result of the payload. For example, the presence of the antigen target on normal tissues can lead to off-target effects. Furthermore, the stability of the linker used to bind the payload to the antibody plays a key role. That is, a less stable linker, referred to as a cleavable linker, often leads to premature drug release and increased chemotherapy-related toxicities. In contrast, more stable linkers, or non-cleavable linkers, are associated with more unexpected adverse effects because the stability of the linker leads to prolonged circulation of the drug. In other words, the payload is released later and in variable and sometimes unexpected body locations. A good example of this is that the ocular toxicities associated with antibody-drug conjugates have been linked to more stable or non-cleavable linkers. The differences in toxicities between sacituzumab govitecan and datopotamab deruxtecan, or Dato-DXd, is a perfect example of how variable the toxicities of these drugs can be. These two drugs are both TROP2-directed antibody-drug conjugates and have topoisomerase 1 inhibitor payloads. Both drugs also have cleavable linkers. However, each drug has different activity and a unique toxicity profile. Because of the payload, we think of diarrhea and decreased blood counts. As I mentioned earlier, these drugs are chemo-like. Yes, we see myelosuppression and fatigue and diarrhea, but we can also see more visceral organ toxicities that can be sometimes worse than chemotherapy, such as keratitis of the eye and interstitial lung disease. The studies that led to the sacituzumab govitecan and Dato-DXd's approval identified many common toxicities. For example, 40% of patients had alopecia. Greater than 30% of patients reported some grade of fatigue. and both groups had a high incidence of nausea. However, sacituzumab govitecan was notable for neutropenia and diarrhea. In fact, this drug has a black box warning for these two adverse events. 61% of patients reported diarrhea. Similar to irinotecan, individuals who are homozygous for UGT181 STAR28 allele are at increased risk for neutropenia. I think it's helpful to compare this drug with a commonly used chemotherapeutic agent like docetaxel. Like Dr. Morgenstern discussed in the EVOKE-1 trial, which compared sacituzumab to docetaxel, the incidence of grade 3 or higher adverse events was lower with sacituzumab govitecan, and adverse events leading to dose reduction and discontinuation were also lower in the sacituzumab arm. Of note, 42% of patients receiving sacituzumab experienced grade 1 or 2 diarrhea, while 11% experienced grade 3 or higher. In contrast to sacituzumab, 53% of patients that received Dato-DXd reported stomatitis, and 11% of patients experienced interstitial lung disease. In TROPION-Lung1, the overall safety profile of Dato-DXd was favorable compared to docetaxel. Despite the longer treatment duration, there were fewer grade 3 or higher adverse events and discontinuations in the Dato-DXd arm. Stomatitis and nausea were more frequent with Dato-DXd, though both symptoms were predominantly grade 1 or 2. Stomatitis and ocular surface events are adverse events of special interest, like I mentioned in Dato-DXd. And in our practice, we have a pretty low threshold to get ophthalmology and dermatology involved. We encourage frequent salt and baking soda mouth rinses, and a dexamethasone mouth rinse is prescribed prophylactically. In summary, while sacituzumab govitecan and Dato-DXd have the same target and the TOPO1 inhibitor payloads, the drugs do have unique toxicity profiles. There's certainly a call for having an understanding of what these drugs are, their approved indications, and their dosing, including dose reductions, in order to provide effective and safe care for our patients. With that, I'm honored to introduce our amazing pharmacist, Janelle, who will discuss the dosing of these drugs.
Mary Ellen, and thank you, Dr. Morgenstern. My name is Janelle Mann. I'm a clinical pharmacist that practices in the thoracic oncology space at Siteman Cancer Center in Washington University. It's always nice to be able to collaborate with providers and mid-levels as well as nurses. And I will say that these two drugs bring forward a lot of great opportunities for our patients. One thing that I would like to do today is just describe the dosing variability between the two products, as well as some of the required supportive care and elements you may see in the treatment room. Again, as we educate our patients to what to expect when they go across to receive these infusions, they're prepared for the elements that come about. So with sacituzumab govitecan, the dosing is 10 milligrams per kilogram given IV on days 1 and 8 every 21 days. The first day of the infusion is given over 3 hours. So that very first visit is a longer visit. It is also required that patients stay to be observed for an additional 30 minutes after the end of that infusion. To mention the infusion time being 3 hours, these patients are also heavily pre-medicated. So, as described when we talk about this drug class, there are elements of standard supportive care that we provide these patients. Much of those are being nausea and vomiting. I would highlight that with nausea and vomiting, it's really important and key to highlight that sacituzumab has a pretty significant nausea and vomiting concern, of which that they do recommend patients receive a moderate to high emetogenic prophylaxis regimen, which in our institution would include steroids, as well as a 5-HT3 and an NK1 antagonist. Additionally, to prevent infusion-related reactions, patients receive pre-medication with acetaminophen, diphenhydramine, as well as famotidine. These are all given prior to the start of the infusion. So the day of their visit can be fairly long. As described well by both of my prior colleagues, SN-38 is part of this compound. So it is recommended that nursing have access at our organization to atropine for patients that may develop acute toxicities of a cholinergic release of diarrhea, flushing, et cetera. So recognizing that some additional supportive care elements are key with these patients. Also to note, just given the toxicity profile and variability between these two products, with sacituzumab, there was a notable difference in neutropenia rates, and it is recommended as primary prophylaxis for patients to receive growth factors. We typically give patients a long-acting growth factor on day 8. Sometimes, unfortunately, based on patients' prior treatments as well as their tolerability and their bone marrow, we do find that they do require dose reduction. So in that instance, we can offer dose modifications from a 10 milligram per kilogram dosing strategy, reducing it with one dose level to 7.5 milligrams per kilogram, as well as an additional dose reduction down to 5 milligrams per kilogram. Again, notably noticing that these patients are being dosed day 1 and day 8. Sometimes patients struggle meeting parameters on day 8, and there may be a place for intermittent growth factor between doses of days 1 and 8 if dose reductions are not significantly helping with that. Additionally, with the future infusions, if patients do well, we can reduce the infusion time down from 3 hours to a 60-minute to 2-hour infusion based on tolerability. Now, comparing this profile with that of datopotamab deruxtecan, the dosing schedule with this is actually given at day 1 every 21-day schedule. So we remove that day 8 dosing requirement that we saw with sacituzumab. Datopotamab has a dose of 6 milligram per kilogram as its recommended starting dose. It is important to highlight that there is a max weight that's recommended for this product. So all doses are capped at a max weight of 90 kilograms. So in that, notably, we have our plans routing to round to that particular max weight if a patient is above that threshold, as well as education to nursing that that's intentional. With this infusion, they receive a drug over 90 minutes for their first infusion and then are recommended to stay for observation of 1 hour. If they do well, that infusion time can be reduced down to 30 minutes. As we talked previously with sacituzumab and all of its supportive care measures, there's a lot of things that go into play with datopotamab and its pre-medication approaches. So again, the risk of infusion-related reactions are there. So we do recommend use of acetaminophen, diphenhydramine, as well as the risk of nausea and vomiting. Our standard protocol is to recommend traditional steroids with dexamethasone, a 5-HT3 antagonist, and optional or recommendation of NK1 antagonist for patients that are struggling with nausea and vomiting. Additionally, given the ocular toxicities, we have reminders for our nursing counterparts to verify that patients have removed their contact lenses if they wear contacts during the infusion to avoid additional risk with that particular toxicity, as well as assurance that patients have picked up our recommendation of supportive care medications, such as the dexamethasone mouth rinse, the recommendation of artificial tears to utilize 4 times a day to help with the dry eye and additional toxicities that can present. And one other notable recommendation in the package labeling to abate some of the stomatitis toxicities is that patients actually have ice chips or cold water in their mouth during the infusion of datopotamab. So obviously that very first infusion is quite long at 90 minutes and can be challenging to comply with that recommendation, but it is noted to help with some of the stomatitis toxicities and oral mucosa toxicities that are observed. Obviously, if patients do well and can reduce to that 60 minutes, they additionally can tolerate that infusion and keeping those supportive care measures going during their treatment. It's really key to having a collaborative approach. Obviously, we know what to do initially upfront, but ultimately, patients will be given all of the options and still struggle with some of these toxicities. And it will be important to note that with datopotamab, you can reduce the dose from 6 milligrams per kilogram down to 4 milligram per kilogram, and even subsequently to 3 milligram per kilogram based off of toxicity profile. So I'd love to hear from my colleagues just with some of our general experience and what we've observed with some of the toxicities. I think nausea and vomiting is one that many of us are pretty comfortable managing, but bringing in the ADC profiles, we have a lot of new toxicities that in the past were maybe not on our radar. So just wanting to hear from you both or hear a case or two of how you've managed some of the stomatitis-related toxicities. Definitely, Mary Ellen mentioned collaboration with other disciplines and pulling in additional experts. But any tips or tricks that either of you have found beyond what was suggested so far with regards to supportive care at home?
Yeah, I think I did touch on the baking soda salt rinses, and I tell them to do that as many times as they can. But unfortunately, it's really tough and it can impact their life. It alters taste. I've had patients with weight loss. In a severe case, I've had to admit a patient that got very dehydrated. So I think that supporting them, but drilling into them that this dexamethasone rinse, they have to hold it and really work it around in their mouth. It's not fun, but to hopefully get ahead of it is so important.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
One thing that we need to remember is that we look at the efficacy and everything, and when you look at the table with the toxicities, you have to remember that we're very familiar with toxicity from docetaxel, and when the numbers or percentage of toxicities are increased, they're mostly cytopenias, and patients don't suffer from cytopenias. This is a toxicity that bothers doctors more than patients, especially slight decrease in platelets or white cells. So having a 50% incidence of diarrhea seems to be worse than a 70% grade 1 thrombocytopenia, for example. And those factors need to be taken into consideration when deciding which treatment to give. Because when we say docetaxel has more toxicities, what kind of toxicities we're talking about? Stomatitis that we see, we don't give 5-fluorouracil. We're not used to that. It's kind of a change. It's a fancy chemotherapy with somewhat unpredictable toxicities. And I know they will be giving it to patients with non-small cell lung cancer very soon. And we need to be more familiar with the toxicities. We know those from clinical trials where patients are very fit and very well organized. What happens when we start giving it to everybody, basically? We need to be very conscious about those.
Yeah, and I do think there's a lot of continued re-education on the need to follow the supportive care measures when they are at home. There's a lot of technique to assuring that the mouthwash is being distributed appropriately and really the benefits of that. And I do think patients sometimes struggle when you hand them a lot of new medications that have indications that are as needed, when symptoms present, diarrhea being one of them. They do fine, they go home, they're not thinking about it, and then it hits and has a lot of struggles with staying on top of that particular toxicity too. So I do agree that finding the right patient, making sure the patients are educated, our clinical teams are familiar with these newer toxicities, so not brushing off what can be, my vision seems altered, and making sure that they're reaching out for changes of that nature because it is attributable to this new product. So I would highlight that that education even becomes more important over time.
So I hope that you enjoy our discussion. We'll talk about efficacy, toxicity, and administration. I cannot think about anything that was left out of it. So hope to see you in the next episode.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On the Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available. Or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On the Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.